Hello and welcome to episode 318 of the Mark and Me podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark. Now, joining me on today's episode is Tom Higginson. Yes, the singer from one of the best bands out there, Plain White Tees. This interview is huge, and you know that this band only just a couple of weeks ago hit the billion streams milestone on Spotify for Hey There Delilah. Now, I don't know if you think that's impressive, but I do. And that's such a huge amount of plays, and this band deserve it. Everyone knows that song, and on today's episode, we get to dive deep and talk all about his music career, his journey to date, and their brand new self-titled album, which is out now and truly, absolutely awesome. So I can't wait to share that interview with you in just a few minutes' time. But before we get there, let's quickly touch base and talk about episode 317. I was joined by the amazing film director, Jake West. Thank you so much to everyone that tuned in and checked it out, all the amazing people that took the time to share it. It means so much to me, and I know Jake really enjoyed coming on, and I can say he will be coming back on for more in the very near future. But today, it's all about the band Plain White Tees, and Tom is a great guest. And if you enjoy listening to this today, it is also available to watch on YouTube if you'd like to do that too. It's up there right now, and the response to that also has been absolutely amazing so far, so thank you. So I think the best thing to do now is to get straight to the interview. So here's me and Tom talking all things music.
Delilah, what's it like in New York City? I'm 1,000 miles away, but girl, tonight you look so pretty. Yes, you do. Times Square can't shine as bright as you. I swear it's true.
So, Tom, thanks for joining me today on the Mark and Me podcast.
Absolutely. Good to be here. How you doing?
I'm really good, thanks. It's great to see you, and obviously even better to talk to you. What I love to do with all guests that come on the show is take it right back to the very start. So what I'm really interested in is when you were a kid, what were those first albums that maybe you bought with pocket money or that were given to you by a family member or friends that made you fall in love with music?
Yeah, great question. So it's funny that one of the first memories that I have in life in general is flipping through my parents' record collection. Like their vinyl would be like kind of like laying stacked up against a wall or something. And I would just like, I remember as a little kid, just like looking at all the album covers, just like wide eyed. And like, you know, there was so much mystery there, especially this was in like the early 80s. So think about all those weird, like late 70s Ozzy Osbourne and like crazy album covers, you know, it was like a whole world in my mind of imagination, like what these albums were. But yeah, with my own money, I feel like, there was a TV show, The Monkees.
Amazing, you know, show. That? Yeah. The theme tune. Oh, yeah. The theme tune was always in my head for days.
Hey, we're the Monkees.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, totally. So that was like, I mean, because I was like a kid and it was like kind of themed, it was probably on Nickelodeon reruns or something like that. But yeah, I was like, this is cool. I love these guys. So I would have my mom, like, you know, we'd buy like the tape, the cassette tape of all their albums or whatever. So that was like my first band that I felt like I actually, you know, liked and discovered that wasn't just like my parents, you know, music. The Beach Boys were another one. I got like a Beach Boys greatest hit CD. That was one of the first CDs I ever got. And yeah, I was really into early on, like, again, maybe because of the Monkees. It's like, for some reason, I always had this, you know, kind of like, I don't know, like connection to like music that was like from like the 50s and the 60s. I don't know, like those oldies really like connected with me. When I was in like junior high is when like Boys to Men came out and stuff, and you know, they were kind of doing that doo-wop throwback kind of thing, and I really loved them. And so yeah, it was all about kind of that, those oldies. I would get like the cassette tapes that was like Billboard top 10 hits of 1958, you know, and it was, you know, My Boyfriend's Back, and or all those like classic songs. And then when I got into high school is when, you know, that whole the whole like 90s grunge alternative explosion was happening. So then I went from like the oldies to like straight into like Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Weezer, Green Day. It's like that music just took over. And you know, a year, I think I got a drum set my freshman year of high school because I wanted to learn how to play the drums. And then I about a year later I got a guitar and started writing songs, and then it just kind of like never stopped, obviously, ever
I mean, there's some
since.
incredible foundations there, and what a jump from all those 50s and 60s straight to like Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, Nirvana. Like,
Totally.
it's insane, but everyone did it. And growing up in the 80s myself, and then exploring music in the early 90s, Nirvana was one of the ones that changed it for me. Guns N'
Oh, yeah.
Roses, those bands were like epic. And I couldn't
Oh, yeah.
believe that Kurt could sing and play the guitar and only have three people in the band. I was just blown away that they could make that much noise. And there's something about the songs that just drew me in. And Nirvana Nevermind for me was just the album. It made me want to pick up a guitar. It made me want to learn how to play Come As You Are and Teen
Oh
Spirit and
yeah,
even
Come
Stand
As
in
You
Front of the
Are.
Mirror, you know, like
Come
thinking I
As
was
You
wanting
Are.
to be Kurt Cobain.
Definitely one of the both those songs actually, Come As You Are and Smells Like Teen Spirit were like possibly the first two songs I learned on guitar.
Amazing.
Yeah, for sure. And I guarantee everybody like around our age that plays music is the exact same way. I feel like for some reason those songs and that album, it really was pivotal for like a lot of people's like musical development for sure. And like you said, maybe because it was just three guys and they were so noisy, it was like it gave you the feeling that like, oh, I could do that. Like you could see yourself in them, you know? Whereas
So
in the
true.
80s, bands like Guns N' Roses, it was like, okay, they're so amazing. And you got Slash up there, like doing three guitar solos every song. You're like, okay, like I can never be that, you know?
Felt like a
But
rock
then,
star status, didn't it? It felt like Axl Rose was like a god, where Kurt Cobain was
oh
one of
yeah,
us, and you could.
exactly.
I think what changed it for me was when I was learning the guitar, my mum and dad got me an acoustic and I was watching the Unplugged set and everyone had it on VHS. And I was watching Polly and I was sitting there thinking, how can that only be four chords? You know, really simple E, G,
Right.
D, C. And I was sitting there thinking, I can do this. Like, that's my idol. That's Kurt Cobain, my hero right now. But it's not like you said, it's not Slash who's doing some incredible 2.5 minute solo where your fingers like don't stop. I was like, I can play along with Polly.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the beauty of punk rock. It's like anybody can do it. It's you
Yeah.
know, what I was gonna say, like bands like the Ramones and like even moving forward to like a band like Weezer, who I loved, they were kind of just doing oldies but with distortion, you know?
Yeah.
Like so it there was that lineage from my, you know, the stuff that I loved growing up. I could find that in this music. And I feel like Nirvana is the same way. They just kind of had kind of different chords, you know? They did
Yeah.
the same, you know, easy three, four chord progressions, but they somehow did it in a way of, you know, you never heard those progressions before. And kind of still to this day, like that Nirvana Nevermind album is a real special, important album because yeah, it hasn't really been touched, you know. I don't know how he wrote those songs. Pretty amazing.
And you've mentioned Weezer. That blue album changed my life. Genuinely, if it was the other way around today, and you're asking me the questions, the first time I heard "My Name Is Jonas," "Say It Ain't So,"
Oh
Buddy
yeah.
Holly, I honestly couldn't believe how powerful those songs were. But the videos were cool. They were a band just having fun. You know, I
Oh
just
yeah.
remember thinking, watching MTV, those guys are normal guys, even nerdy type of guys, and they're
Yeah.
having the time of their life.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the videos definitely helped with Weezer because they even played into it with like being extra nerdy and kind of the throwback to like the 50s, like the Happy Days, Buddy Holly video and
Amazing.
stuff like that. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what about live music? Because we've mentioned a few great bands today, but Green Day were one of my first ever bands I got to see live on their Dookie tour. And if we talk about three musicians making great amounts of sound, Trey Cool, Mike, and Billy Joel Armstrong, like, my God, those three are incredible. And what was your first live music experience? Because I think that does change it for most people, that then they can experience it and kind of had their rib cage shake and the hairs on their neck stick up. And it suddenly is a whole new world, isn't it?
Well, not to keep, coming back to Weezer, but I saw, it was actually my second concert ever, but it was Weezer at a tiny club in Chicago on the Blue Album.
Oh,
like,
wow.
One of their first times through, I think. Yeah. And I remember it was literally they actually opened with Jamie, that song.
Yeah.
And then went into My Name is Jonas, and, after that.
Yeah.
So it was like but they started playing, and literally I was like lifted off the ground and like moving around side to side, because the crowd was just, it was like, they were like moshing, but not in like a violent way. It was just like it was crazy. And it was, again, like seeing that band at that time. And I was probably 15 or something like that. And it was just like, it was magical. And yeah, luckily being from Chicago, I was able to see, like, I saw No Doubt on Tragic Kingdom, like at that same venue, really
small.
I'm
so jealous right now.
Like, yeah, there was so many. I saw the Smashing Pumpkins there. They were from Chicago. So, yeah, I got to see. It's like Chicago was a place where every band would, every tour came through Chicago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very lucky to be
Smashing
that.
Smashing Pumpkins at their early days. Wow. Siamese Dream, the textbook album.
I just bought the Melancholy. They have this box set.
You got the new vinyl.
Yeah, it's like a box set. I haven't even opened it yet. I just bought it, but I'm so excited. That album for me was like when I was like, I'm a pretty optimistic person, but I feel like there was like one period of my life where I got a little set. Like I was just kind of sick of my friends and sick of probably at the end of high school or something. And this Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness was the album that like, I just would listen to every day after school and like got me through like that shitty time. So yeah. So
1979 is genuinely in my top five songs of all time. I still listen to it now and think it was recorded yesterday. It's just perfection.
Totally. It
absolutely
really is
incredible.
Beautiful.
So then, I mean, we're talking now when you're in your when you're about 15, 16, going into your teenage years. When was it that you actually got that urge to want to be in a band? Because some people do it at school, in college, and do the whole covers band or battle of the bands, but when was it that you thought, I want to have a go at this?
So, yeah, right around that time, like in high school, 15, 16 years old, we'd actually, we had like a group of friends that would all kind of play, a couple guys played guitar. I played drums and I played guitar and stuff. And so we'd all come back to my house after school and we would just like jam. We would play like 2000 Light Years Away, Green Day song, and
that's a great
Weezer songs. And yeah, so we would just kind of come back to my house and jam a bunch of like cool songs. And that's where it all started. That's when it was like, I started writing my own songs, and I would do 4-track demos because I could play drums and guitar. I would be able to just sit in my basement and like record, kind of a full song. 1-track of guitar, a bass, drums, and 1 vocal, and like be able to make my own demos, So I would make my own little EPs. I would record like 5 songs and just like pass them out. I would, record tapes, make like 20 tapes and just like pass them out to all my friends at school the next day, kind of a thing. And so it was literally that just led to me and a couple of those guys that we would go home and jam, with every day to just form Plain White Tees. It was like, oh, well, I got these songs that are pretty cool and my friends seem to like them. Like, why don't we like make a band? And that's really just how it started, very organically like that, just so we could start playing these songs I was writing.
That was literally the word in my head. I was like, this sounds so organic and so natural. And that must be beautiful, because some people take so many risks and chances, and it doesn't happen, and then the personalities get in the way, and then you try another band and another band, but it sounds like it was meant to be. It kind of all fitted in place right away.
I feel like a lot of people, you know, a lot of people hold themselves back. I think that's like, well, I need to find the perfect band or the perfect musicians or the this and everything has to. It's like, I've just learned from my own experiences, like, no, you just kind of have to do it, and you have to, you got to suck for a while. You got to fail. You got to do, you know, but just doing it. I don't know. Like if you don't stop and you actually are halfway decent at something, you're going to find your way. You know, it's like you can wait around forever to find the perfect song or the perfect band or whatever, but way easier to just get the hell out there and just be shitty for a while, but just do it, you know?
So what was your mindset when you started out in 97? Were you guys all kind of like-minded and kind of had no expectations? Or were you kind of like, we want to try and do this full-time as a job? Or were you just having fun and experimenting with friends and just making music?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wanted to do, I knew I wanted to do it for like my life, I think. It was actually, you know, we were talking about inspiration. In 95, the Jagged Little Pill album, Alanis Morissette.
So good.
What a fucking album. That one was a big like game changer for me. Like, I had never heard anything like that. The way it was just kind of raw. She was out of tune sometimes. The lyrics were so personal and so raw. And that album I really connected to, as did the rest of the world, obviously. It was such a huge record. But that was kind of the album that made me say, like, okay, I want to do this. You know, the feeling that this album gives me, I want to do that. You know, I want to just really dedicate myself to like trying to just tap into 1% of what she's done, you know? So yeah, from about that, and I was probably, let's see, I would have been like 16, I guess, at that time. And that was around that time. Like I said, I was probably in my basement just writing and demoing my own stuff. But yeah, I knew that I wanted to do it at that point. So yeah,
Jagged Little Pill is such a great shout, because I think what that taught me, even when I was a kid and I bought it on CD, I thought, it's okay to be raw. It's okay not to have this polished sound where you overproduce. Because I was still listening to bands like REM at the same time and U2, and they sound so well produced in the studio. Like, all the guitars have had overdubs and been polished. But with Alanis Morissette, I just felt like she was like, fuck it. Like, this is how it sounds. And most of the times it sounded like she was playing live, even though it's on CD and it's done in the studio. And I thought, fair play, like, you just fucking record the songs how you want to, and it worked.
Well, I mean, I know we'll probably get to some of this new music that we're putting out, but that was a bit of the, you know, the mission statement of this new album, was to purposely leave it a little bit raw and a little bit rough around the edges, and just make sure the songs were so good that it didn't matter. You know, it's like, we don't need to overproduce these. We don't need to add too much, you know, shine or shimmer to them. It's like, let them be raw. Let them be a little rough around the edges. And, you know, I think that just gives it a charm. You can really suck the life out of a song, you know, by going too hard on it. So yeah, I don't know. It wasn't necessarily because of Jagged Little Pill, but maybe in the back of my mind, that's, like I said, that was such a huge album for me that I feel like I always strive to have a little bit of that rawness and that vulnerability. And I think with this new album, we definitely is a big success the way we put it together. I think it feels really good and really powerful in that simple, raw kind of way.
Beautiful. We will come to that very shortly, I do promise you. But what I want to know,
again, just set it up with the Alanis thing, because I had never really put those two together, but it's,
and now saying it out loud, it kind of clicks. Especially with bands like Smash and Pumpkins as well, like their early stuff, you know, Gish, that sounds just literally,
oh my god,
a room full of people. Jimmy Eat World, Clarity, those albums of bands that just sound like, when you went to see them live, it wasn't like, Oh, okay. Now it doesn't sound anything like it because it's been so overproduced. It's all about keeping it simple.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a magic in that, you know.
There is. It's
Especially
beautiful.
nowadays, you got everybody, you know, on your laptop, you can have any sound you can think of. You can make things sound so perfect that it's almost like it takes effort to make it sound raw sometimes, you know, to
It's
leave it,
true.
to not want to fix something or to overtune a vocal or something, you know. You have to make that conscious decision to leave it, you
There's
know.
literally a plugin for every possible sound now, when I like
Yep.
the rawness of a
Yep.
band just sounding like they do when you go to the gig.
Yep.
So we're talking about obviously you guys starting out, it being really organic, it goes really well. What was your family like as a support? Were they kind of like, son, we trust in you, go out there, make a music career? Or were they like, come on, son, get a real job, get a career, and then if you need, fall back on your music? Because I do ask this question a lot, but I think it's important because it kind of shaped the person that you are now.
I mean, I got really lucky and had my parents were super supportive. They were I was always like a really smart kid. Like I was in like an honor roll student my whole life. I didn't really have to try too much in school, you know. It was pretty easy for me. So I was always kind of on the path of like, cool, I'll probably go to college. I'll probably, you know, do some lame, easy job and whatever. But it was actually, I think, when I was 15, which is funny because it all kind of leads to that point, probably around that same time Jagged Little Pill came out, and probably around, you know. But my parents got divorced, and that was the first time where my life got a little bit just shaken up a little bit to where I kind of could say, like, you know, like I could look at my life as my own.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, because when you're a kid growing up, it's like, you know, you're just kind of, I don't know, you're just kind of going through not the motions, but like you kind of just do what you're supposed to. You're going to school, you know. And so when they split up, it just kind of like, oh, like, wait a minute, like, you can do that. Like, you can, you know, you're unhappy, you can kind of split up. And it was a little bit dramatic for a moment, but everything, you know, was cooled off. And I don't know, I was emotionally, I guess, intelligent enough to not be like, not have any like resentment or anything. It's like, well, if this is what they need to do, you know, it's not about me. It's like, I'd want them to be happy, whatever, you know. But it was just enough for me to be able to look at my own life and say, like, okay, wait a minute, like, what do I love? What do I want? You know? So honestly, maybe it was like, I don't know. Like, I don't want to say it was like a great thing, but like maybe it was like the perfect thing that needed to happen at that time, you know, for every party involved, you know.
Definitely.
But so yeah, so now I'm forgetting what the hell your question was, but
Just that they were supportive.
okay, so yeah, so yeah, because and maybe it was just like maybe they felt bad or guilty that they had gotten this divorce or they had so may but I think they were always just like, yeah, as long as I was happy, you know, obviously if it wasn't working out and I was like a bum or something, they probably would be like, hey, like, come on, get your shit together. But, you know, the band, it was always kind of like on a decent path of like, okay, we played this gig and there was freaking 200 people there. That's pretty huge for some shitty local band that no one's ever heard of, you know? So it's like it was constantly would grow and you know, and again, they could see that I wasn't like it wasn't a hobby for me. I was taking it seriously. I was dedicating myself to it. I was going out there making flyers, passing them out, doing everything, kind of living and breathing the band. So there wasn't really much they could even say because they could, you know, they could see that I was really trying and I was, you know, it wasn't just some bullshit thing I was doing with my buddies. It was something that I was taking seriously. So yeah, they never really questioned it.
So kind of you mentioned then about how you were having a really good steady kind of progression and, you know, 200 people would turn up at your early shows. Being in the band, and I always get fascinated by this with bands that have been doing it for many years. Did you notice the progression or were you too wrapped up into it kind of internally? Were you able to ever take a step back and be like, hey, there's so many more people here tonight, and then, you know, we're not supporting tonight, we've got a higher build slot, and hey, this is our headline show, and oh my god, people are wearing our t-shirts. Like, could you see it, or were you just too kind of in this tunnel of vision of like, that's where we need to get to, and I can't even take a step back, it's just too full on?
Well, funny that you make that example, because there was one show in particular that I think we all like will remember forever. It was when Hey There Delilah first started getting played on the radio.
Right.
And we had been booked at this gig called Summerfest. It was in Milwaukee, Summerfest. And we had done the same gig a few times in the past, and it's always a really fun show. And but in this particular one, we were like backstage, kind of the whole, we'd sound checked, and then we were all just kind of backstage for a few hours, you know, whatever, just chilling back there eating and whatever. And we went on stage and we walked out, and there was like 10,000 people there.
Wow.
And we were all kind of like literally had this moment of like, wait, who's playing after us? You know, like,
did we miss the memo? Kind of, yeah, is this Metallica
exactly.
show or something?
It was like, yeah, it was like we had to pinch ourselves, and it was like, oh, this is what a hit song looks like. You know, it's like, it was just it literally went from, yeah, a slow build of like, okay, cool, we've played Milwaukee twice this year, and we brought in, you know, 30 more people the second time, and it's growing so, you know, organically to like explosion, you know. It was wild. But yeah, that particular gig was one of the first times where we saw that, and it was like, we all kind of like, what the fuck is happening, you know, looked at each other like, what the hell.
But surely nothing could ever prepare you for that, like that jump overnight, and that single that's now, it's something like 997 million streams now on Spotify. It's like, that is just, I can't get my head around that. It's just, it's crazy.
And it sold 5 million or whatever it was before even Spotify existed.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, so
people
like,
would actually buy it on a thing called a CD.
Right.
Like, people are listening saying, what's that? But, you know.
Yeah. So crazy. Yeah, I mean, again, I didn't, you know, picking up my guitar at 15 years old and writing those songs in my basement. It's like, of course, that's the goal. And that's the dream, is to have, you know, a song and a career that connects that much. But yeah, you're right. The whole time you just kind of have your blinders on and your head down, and you're just kind of going. And honestly, it wasn't even until, you know, after Delilah, you know, like, I think it was one of the first times we ever were able to just look at it and enjoy it, was when we were nominated for some Grammys with Delilah. And it's like, that was the first time where we all were there. We got to, like, you know, it was like parties, Grammy parties, like the night before the Grammys, I think, where we all got to like say like, holy shit, dudes, like, we fucking did it, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a moment of acknowledgement.
Deal.
Yeah, like, we're actually like, this is real. All of those, you know, living in the van for years and just traveling, it's like, we fucking did it, man. It was a nice band moment of like, we were able to like acknowledge that success to each other. It was pretty cool.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
So how and why are you still getting up every day? What is it inside you that's making you want to write music? Is it that it'll just never go away? Because I've had bands on here like Jimmy Eat World, Incubus. Those bands have all been going over 25 years, and I think they'll be going another 20 years. It's those bands you just see. And surely with yourself and the Plain White Tees, you must have no plans to go anywhere soon.
Yeah, funny. I mean, Jimmy Eat World, by the way, one of my favorites. They're such an influential band for us. One of the first bands that ever kind of took us under their wing, too. They gave us a few shows early on when we were kind of like still coming up, that really helped, you know, propel us to the next level. So love those guys. Mad props to them. But yeah, honestly, I just freaking love music, you know. It's literally, there's nothing else to say but that. It's like, I still love Yeah, sitting down and just writing a song. As dumb as that sounds, it's like, what I said, I started when I was like 15. Never, it still kind of feels the same way as it did back then. It's always exciting. It's like if there's a girl on my mind or a situation, that happened, it's like my initial response is like, well, got to write a song about this. Or, it's like it's, I don't know. I'm just so used to doing it. It's like, yeah. And I think I would, it doesn't even matter. Like, obviously, you want every song to be a hit or to be well received or to make some, difference in somebody's life, but that's kind of just like icing. It's like the making the song, the creative process, that just creating this thing that didn't exist, an hour ago. That's like, it just gives you such a feeling, that nothing else in life really, really touches. So I don't think I'll ever get sick of that.
But isn't that so? It's not luck. It's so fortunate that you still have that drive. You have that passion. It never goes away. Some people, maybe it's, I don't know, life gets in the way, or they get married, or they have kids, or they have breakups, or just stuff happens. But you've still got that chemistry inside you, that blood, that kind of mentality of, I want to write a song about this. I'm not doing it because I'm having a record label tell me to go up on stage and play because we need to pay the mortgage. It's you're
Right.
doing it because you want to, and I think that's beautiful. That's rare.
Again, until you're saying it, I don't really haven't really ever thought about it, I'm not really ever never once have I thought like, oh, I should probably not write a song, not write songs anymore. It's just like something that, again,
It's
I
part
would
of you, isn't
do.
it?
Yeah, like even if Delilah never even hit, I think I'd just still be doing this. And yeah, I don't know. I just like I said, there's no feeling that, like writing a song. And it's also just kind of like a therapy too. It's like something goes on in your life, it's like, well, luckily I've got my guitar to turn to. I can, write about something and help me get it off my chest if I have to. Or, it's like there's so many reasons to write songs. Yeah, aside
It's a
from
lot
it.
cheaper than a therapy session every week.
Exactly. Yeah. And on the flip side, it can make you a lot of money if you do it good enough,
You
So it's
go.
like there's that too. It's like there's, yeah, it's just been such a great outlet. Yeah, on in so many levels in my life. Yeah.
And as we're sitting here right now, the new album's finished, mastered, ready for the world to listen to. Hopefully, after this interview, more people go and check it out. But self-titled, nearly 5 years since your last release.
Yeah, well, you can't really count the pandemic, I
No.
think the whole world kind of stopped for a little bit there. But yeah, it's been a minute. 2018 was our last album. Yeah, so I'm sorry, I cut you off. What were you gonna say?
I just feel like, does it feel like Christmas Eve? Does it feel all exciting that you can start playing these songs live and showing people new music that, for you guys as musicians that play gigs and do so many tour dates, it must be nice to be like, let's get some of those news tracks in the set list and feel excited again and,
Yeah,
challenged.
we've already been, leading up to this album, we've released a few songs, early as singles. And yeah, it's really hard to like play some shows and not be like, oh, we gotta let's throw this other one in the set. Or, it's like to kind of control ourselves, because yeah, we really do love this album, and we're all so excited about these songs that yeah, we just want to start playing them. We want to get them, can't wait to get them out there. But yeah, it feels like a fresh life, like a new lifeblood in the band. I don't know, it's a really fun album, like I said earlier, very raw, very real, very honest, very vulnerable. And yeah, when you put yourself out there like that, you kind of can't help but be excited about it. You can't help but want to play the songs and want people to hear it. You know, we've made some music videos already for some of the songs that I'm so excited about. I think Red Flags is one of the videos that I think is probably one of our best videos we've ever made. Would You Even, super fun video. Spaghetti Tattoo, the video we're all puppets. Like, it's just, we're having such a blast, even just setting up the album, that, like, you know, once it comes out, we just hope that people love it as much as we do, and people really connect to it, and feel, yeah, the same energy that we feel and that we felt making it. Just a lot of fun, very effortless album. You know, again, we purposely kept it raw and rough around the edges. There was just an energy in our minds, in the inspiration in the songs, that we just kind of didn't want to mess with. We just left it out there. So hopefully people get that vibe when they hear it. Hopefully it's as contagious as we hope it is.
Is there kind of a deep nervous excitement in there as well? Because it isn't the polished, perfect sounding album. It's a bit raw. It's got that elements of roughness around the sides, like you just said. Is there kind of a, I wonder if people are going to be on the same wavelength and appreciate this, or.
You know, it's funny. It's almost the opposite, believe it or not. I feel like when you overproduce something, I
Yep.
feel like, yeah, in theory, this should be better because it's tighter or because it's slicker or whatever. But it's almost like when you do that, you take some of yourself out of it, you know? So, in a weird way, I feel less nervous about this album because it's not overproduced, because
Yeah.
it's raw. It's a more accurate, you know, version of us and of me. So I feel less nervous about it in a way. Does that make sense?
But it's more
Even though
like
I'm being
it's like an honest representation of who you actually are and who the band are, instead of polishing over it and then making you something that you're not.
exactly. Yep. So I feel like, yeah, because it's more real, I'm more confident with it. I'm more, yeah, because it's not hiding behind a bunch of production. It's not, like you said, yeah, trying to make something more glossy than we really are, or make it better than we really are. It's like, well, this is kind of us. And it's kind of cool that we aren't freaking, you know, Kelly Clarkson when we sing. We're
Yeah.
just us, you know. It's like, it's kind of cool that we, you know, we're not Slash. We are just, you know,
Yourselves.
exactly. So yeah, it feels like one of the most authentically us albums that we've probably ever made.
So I have to ask the question, obviously, you know, I'm based in the UK. Is there any talk or anything happening that we can get to see you guys anytime soon?
I sure as hell hope so. We were scheduled to come over there in 2020, and obviously we couldn't. We had to
Yeah, the world
you know
stopped
had to
still,
cancel
yeah.
that. Yep. But so we definitely owe you guys a trip. And I feel like, yeah, we already have a Brazil. We're going to Brazil for the first time next
Wow.
year in March. Never gone there. Have a ton of fans over there. So yeah, I have a feeling this album is going to really take us back around the world, and you guys will be 100% our first, our most important priority to get there. We love it there. And like I said, we were scheduled to come over, so we miss you guys. And definitely, as soon as we can, hopefully there'll be some festivals and stuff like
Yep.
that, you
Any
know, in the
excuse we can
spring.
find to get you over here, just yep.
Yeah, exactly. Hell yeah. And likewise, any excuse for us to get over there, we'll jump on it.
I'll start my own festival. You're gonna headline. I
Yeah,
can't
right.
pay you very
Let's
much
go.
money, but we'll have a laugh.
Perfect.
My final question for you today is, and what I do on this podcast is to try and keep it as original as I can. The guest that comes on gets put on the spot for the final question. Now, over 300 episodes recorded, everyone's had the same question. The final piece of music that's played on today's episode is chosen by the guest. So, as this is all
Oh.
edited and the world's ready to listen to it, that final song that's played is literally your choice. But I don't want to give you too long. I don't want to edit it and make it, you know, sound like you chose in a minute. I want to put you on the spot and feel like, what's the song that comes to your heart and soul that you adore by any band or any piece of music in the world? that you would love to be played out after our chat today?
Jeez, that is fucked up, man.
I know. And you'll probably want to message me in like 2 hours and be like, can I change my mind? And
yeah, exactly. Well, when you were saying it at first, I was thinking of a song off of our, you know, just the new album. A song called Fired Up is one of my favorites. So I'm not saying that's my final answer, but that's where, before you open it up to like any song, that's what I was going to say, just to kind of, again.
Well, what
just...
I'll do, I'll make you a deal. So as the interview starts, we'll have a little snippet of that exact track for you, Fired Up for you, yeah? Straight away.
Okay.
So that's played.
I like
but
it.
This,
okay.
But as it finishes and everyone's listening and they'll still hear this part now, it can be any band, any piece of music, any song in the entire world. We've talked about Smashing Pumpkins, Nirvana, Jimmy Eat World. We've talked about the 50s. We've covered a lot of music today.
Well, okay. So I will say that I spend a lot of time in California.
Yeah.
And ever since I was a kid, I think I mentioned the Beach Boys was one of my early on albums. Ever since I was a kid, there was something coming up in the Midwest. I'm from Chicago, and there's always this like just something, this magic about California, you know, and that was in pop culture, that was in, you know, a lot of those, like I said, those oldies, 50s and 60s, there was a lot of that, you know, talk about California and everything. It was always this magical place, and I do spend a lot of time out there now. And a lot of this new album, there's a song called Girl from Pasadena, which is like a suburb of Los Angeles. In the Spaghetti Tattoo song, I say driving in from Malibu. You know, there's a few of those California references that are very authentic to, like I said, me being out there a lot, but also almost hearkening back to some of those early like love songs and songs that I would love as a kid that really made me fall in love with music and fall in love with great pop songs.
This is a nice, you know? 360. I love this.
Yeah. So I was going to say, I would probably say one of my favorite songs of all time. And it kind of is a kind of a moody one, but it kind of ties it all together. Maybe California Dreamin' by the Mamas and the Papas.
Unbelievable.
It's such a
song.
Beautiful song. And that is just so haunting. And it has that like, yeah, I don't know. It ties in, I think, again, to like all the stuff we've been talking about and the new album, and just, yeah, it's the perfect wrap-up song, I think.
It's a beautiful song, and it's got one of the most catchy choruses ever, but it's quite harrowing in parts. And if you really strip back and listen to the different parts of the vocals and the rawness, which we've talked a lot about today, my God, it's unbelievable, that song. Like, it's when you really put your headphones on and close your eyes and just lose yourself in that song, especially stuff like Beach Boys as well, and, you know, God Only Knows, tracks like this, you know. But my God, Mamas and Papas just blow my mind, and I always hear something new every time I listen.
Yeah, I love that. It's again, kind of like some of the songs we've been talking about and some of the new songs on our album. It's like, you'd think it's a California Dreamin', it's like a positive song, but the melodies are kind of in a minor key, and some of the lyrics, you're like, wait, it's a little sad, and it's a little bit like you're not sure if it's happy. Like, you don't know how to feel when you listen to it. And I think that that's just one of the things I love about music. Like, even when we talked about Nirvana and stuff like that, it's like, it makes you feel, it's like you're happy and sad almost at the same time, you know? And that's something that I think music can give you that no other art form can, you know, make you feel a certain way. And I don't know. So that would be, yeah, that's definitely one of my go-tos as far as just favorite song of all time. And again, like I said, all the stuff we've talked about, it just seems to wrap it up pretty well.
It's beautiful. I mean, what I was going to say about that song is, some people will listen to that and think it's a beautiful, really upbeat, happy song, and the sun comes out and it's the song they put on. Some people might lose a loved one or have a real bad day, get home, have a glass of wine, light a candle and put it on and, you know, be quite bleak and just feel low about it, and you can relate to it. And there's not many songs that can have that much power to kind of tick both boxes. And I can't wait now to edit this episode and then just have an excuse to listen to that song for a few hours.
Nice. There you go.
It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. I really, really hope it isn't too long until we can actually have a chat face to face, have a beer and be at a concert, real soon for the Plain White Tees, because obviously COVID affected a lot of people's lives, but concerts got cancelled. I missed out on so many concerts. Yours was one, and I really can't wait for it to hopefully happen again soon.
Absolutely. Like I said, we're going to do our best to get there ASAP. So we'll see you guys hopefully very soon. Early next, first half, knock on wood, of next year. So we'll be there.
And a massive good luck with a new album. I'm lucky I get sent an advanced copy of these albums, and I won't talk or spoil too much. But when you're talking about the rawness and everything, I was like, I'm so glad he's talking about this because it's something I wanted to talk about. But it's beautiful and easily one of your best pieces of work to date.
Thank you. Yeah, I really, like you said, I feel, because it's so honest, I feel really confident with it. I feel like this is an album that I'll do anything, to get people out there to hear it, because I know it's going to connect. It's like because it's real and because it's straight from the heart, So anyway.
Tom, it's been a pleasure, my friend.
Likewise. Yeah, thank you so much. Good talking, and yeah, I'll see you hopefully in a few months, man.
I'll hold you to this.
Hell yeah.
It's so elementary, minus you, I'm incomplete. We're the perfect problem, baby. You plus me. Hold your breath and count to three. Dancing with a four left feet. We're the perfect problem, baby.
So there it is. There's my interview with me and Tom from the amazing band Plain White Tees. What a lovely guy, so full of energy, and such a pleasure to welcome him on Mark and Me podcast. I absolutely love their brand new album. It's the self-titled album, In Is Out Now, and I'm really excited by the end of his interview where he kind of teased that they will be over in the UK, hopefully early next year, and I will be there. So hopefully after you've listened to today's interview, you guys at home will go and check out the brand new album and then let me know what you think. It's brilliant. Also, I just want to say now a massive thanks to Tom for taking the time to come on the episode. I know how busy your life is and your time means hell of a lot to come on Mark and Me. Also, the great guys at the Good as Gold Group for making the interview happen. And as always, thanks to you guys at home for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode with Tom, please go on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, and why not share this episode? I say it each and every week because it really is crucial to the growth of Mark and Me. But if you're listening and you have a Facebook account, just hit the share button. If you're on Twitter or X or whatever it's called this week, retweet it. And if you're on Instagram, just hit that little heart button and like it. Or if you really want to be kind, put it as part of your stories. I see all the people that take the time to do this. Don't think it goes unnoticed, and it's appreciated more than you'll ever realize. I do also have a Patreon account, and the link is on markandme.com. I can't do this podcast and host it on all these different directories for free, so all the support that comes in on Patreon goes right back into the making of this podcast and allows me to go out there, record episodes for you guys at home, host it on all these different directories, and make sure that everyone has access to the Mark and Me podcast. And you can go on Patreon and sign up for as little as £1 a month. In return, you're going to get exclusive episodes each and every month that are only available to people on Patreon. You're going to get entered to prize draws. You're also going to get a welcome pack, which includes stickers and a badge and so much more. I really go out my way to make sure the patrons feel very valued, and it's my way of thanking you for supporting me that little bit extra. And as I said at the start of today's interview, this interview, as well as another 10 interviews, are available on my recently released YouTube channel. It's called Mark and Me TV, and I'm absolutely loving it. So if you want to go and watch the interview or any other interview right now, go on YouTube and just search Mark and Me. Also, just before I go, I want to give a quick shout out to the sponsors of the podcast, the amazing guys at Richer Sounds. Each month, those guys sponsor and support the podcast. So if you're in the market for a brand new TV, why not go on richersounds.com and treat yourself to something awesome? And finally, the guys at Folio Society. They are the best bookmakers in the world, and I'm not just saying that, my collection speaks volumes. If you want a beautiful edition of one of your favourite books, go on foliosociety.com and you will not regret it. I'll be back in only a few days' time with another brand new episode. So until then, go and listen to Plain White Tees, look after yourself, take care, and I'll speak to you all very soon.
All the leaves are brown.
passed along.